Hello, everyone. Welcome to ADAP Prevention 365 podcast, where prevention is every day in every way. Today, we have a special episode. We're partnering with the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, SAPC, Substance Abuse Prevention and Control, because it's National Prevention Week. And today, we have three fabulous guests. We'll talk about the workforce, the importance of our work, and why we're so passionate for it. So let's introduce ourselves, and we can start with Christy.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here with you today. Happy National Prevention Week. I'm Christy Zamani, Executive Director for Day One.
Charles Porter, and I'm the Project Coordinator for United Coalition East, which is a program of social model recovery systems.
Good morning, Stephen Cagle. I am with the CORE Center, Connecting Opportunities for Recovery and Engagement, in Inglewood at Curtis Tucker Wellness Center, and I'm part of Substance Abuse Prevention and Control.
Awesome, and again, my name is Marlon Pascual. I am your host for today and a community organizer with ADAP Inc. So again, today we're gonna highlight the prevention and workforce and what we do here in LA County. We definitely wanna highlight the commitment that we have to the community. We'll share our personal experiences and stories. Definitely wanna highlight mental health along with the prevention work. So I guess we'll just get started. So my first question, and I'll direct it to Steve and Christine, Charles, you can chime in as well, is do you have a personal story that really attaches you to the substance abuse prevention work? Or is there something that makes you very passionate for the work that you do?
Yeah, thanks so much, Marlon. Fortunately and unfortunately, I have experience in substance abuse, 23 years worth of, damaging myself. And I just never thought that I could come out of it when, especially at the end. So because of that, I just fell into this wonderful workforce and group of people that we assist other people. I just even sitting here thinking about it, I can't believe that I'm where I'm at today because of my history. And it's been such an honor to be able to help other people. I worked on an acute detox for 12 years prior to coming to the county, and to help those people, like I was coming into a program sick and not feeling good and not understanding my own thoughts, to be able to help them really set the course for my life. And I've just never stopped. And I work with all these passionate, wonderful people, and it's really just made my life so fulfilled. And it's strange to say that something so negative turned into something so positive. And sometimes, even like I said, just sitting here with you guys, I can't believe that I feel this way about myself the world around me. So I'm very pleased in that, but that my own history gives me the passion. I always say that sometimes the worst, people that have succumbed to substance abuse, the worst sometimes become the best advocates for recovery. And I think that's a big part of my story.
Well, thank you for that insight to your life. And as you said, now you're a light for our community, especially in what we consider spot A, right? The South Bay and Harbor area, Inglewood. So thank you, Steve. Anything similar for you, Charles or Christy, or maybe it's a different insight, different experience for your passion?
Well, I think for me, piggybacking on the theme of the intersection between recovery and prevention, the program that I work for, United Coalition East, it's a program of social model recovery systems, but social model recovery systems were really pioneers in the treatment field. They opened the River Community in Azusa. They began in 1986, but the River Community was really one of the first programs to really address co-occurring disorders and looking at folks that were struggling with the challenges of addiction as well as mental health challenges. And I remember when I applied and first started working for the company, many of my coworkers were in recovery and versed in the 12-step process. And I remember having conversations about what that process was like and how healing and therapeutic it was, but also have how folks felt the obligation to give back and to help others and to help the community. And that really intersected with my personal journey myself. And I liken my personal path to a form of recovery as well. Looking more so about, you know, being a Black person in America, there are a lot of issues that we face that people aren't really aware of around identity, around culture, and around how you're treated differently. And when you're young, you can't really process that. But what happens a lot is that for me, my personal journey was a recovery from challenging all the negative stereotypes about what it means to be Black in America and what Black people are expected to do and how Black people are supposed to act. And that was a whole journey for me of self-discovery, of really, which I see the similarities for the recovery process, is finding out who you are. Who are you? Why are you here? What is your purpose? What is your, you know, how are you connected to others? And what does a healthy you look like? And that for me really has become a passion in my life. And when I first started working, the work that we do is based here in the Skid Row community in downtown LA. And I remember when I was interviewed for my position many, many moons ago, back in 1999, I'm dating myself a little bit. I remember one of the questions I was asked was, how did I feel about working in this community? And for me, I thought it was kind of an odd question, because on my way to the office, I saw disheartening levels of poverty. But what I also saw was a Black neighborhood, and I felt comfortable. Like, these people are like me. These are my people. Like, this is this is my community. And so I wasn't even aware of the issues that many folks in Skid Row were facing. I just saw people that looked like me, and on my way, they spoke to me and they smiled and greeted me. And so I didn't feel a sense of danger. Other folks passed through Skid Row and they're like, oh my God, there's so many people and it's so dangerous and scary. I'm afraid to go down there. But every face is a person that has a life story, that has a family, that has children, that they've done things that people want to do. I've met here working in the community people that have done everything, supermodels, professional athletes. And so the message in that is really one of resilience. But in the prevention field, I think the other thing that I'm really passionate about is looking at this intersect between culture and resilience, and the fact that the prevention work that we do is also multidisciplinary. We look at how to create healthy communities, how to improve the neighborhood, how to partner with individuals. And that's one thing that I'm really passionate about in the work that I do.
Awesome. Awesome, Charles. Thank you for your commitment. 1999.
Yeah.
We're committed to this work. All right, Christy, do you have anything to say?
I'm so inspired already. I already love this talk. But I mean, like Stephen and Charles, like, I think, you know, what's important about this work, really is it's connected to us through people we know. You got to humanize it. You know, there's so much stigma around addiction, and then we don't want to talk about it, but it affects our parents, our uncles, our aunts, our brothers, our sisters. I don't think anybody knows somebody who hasn't struggled with it. So what speaks to me is humanizing the issue. And I think one of the most beautiful elements in prevention is that we forgive. It's like you always have a chance to come back from it. You have a chance to recover and become like Stephen, like, so to be able to say a story like, and look at me now. That's like the best, I think, prevention person is someone who can share their story and can come back and give of that experience. So I think what really fires me up is these individual stories, as well as, you know, just really, if I believe in something I'm passionate about is equity and justice, and looking at the built environment of, this didn't just seem to happen in some environments and not in other environments. This is a systemic problem. Why are we allowing certain things to happen in certain spaces? And how do we advocate to change those elements? So I think There's a lot of understanding and forgiveness, and again, sharing that responsibility, the accountability of what's happening to a person with the people who allow certain things to take place in different neighborhoods and environments. So I'll stop there. I know we got a lot of conversation going on, but I'll stop there for now.
Yeah, thank you. It's just wonderful responses. You know, the bottom line is humanizing, right? That I connect with you, right? We there's some commonality between us. And you see that, you know, you said that you're passionate about equity and justice. You know, Charles says, this is my community, right? Identifying with the other. Steven says, this is my experience. I can share that with others. So I think that's an important part. I see the same. You know, I've been working in Inglewood with youth for over 10 years, and it was a different field. But now with being in substance abuse prevention, I believe in it, right? Because it's my community. You know, the faces I see reminds me of the people that I grew up that were affected by substance abuse, right? So thank you so much for sharing, you know, what makes you tick, you know, what makes you connect to our community, why you're passionate about this work. So I have a second question, and I'll ask Charles this. You know, through your work, through your experience, what have you witnessed with the power of prevention? So we talked a lot about recovery. Right? The power of recovery. You know, we have Steven, our champion, who's sharing his experience with the community. But what about the power of prevention? And is there any tie with like mental health?
Definitely. One thing I want to just kind of highlight is that Christy touched upon is looking at the systemic like contributing factors. I think for me and the work that we do, that's really been key when we talk about prevention. Many times when folks hear prevention, they go to this place of just say no, but that's not the work that we do. The work that we do is talking with community members and identifying what's happening in the community, what contributes to the issues, and how can we come up with solutions. And so for me, what I've seen and seeing the power of prevention, particularly here in Skid Row, is being able to amplify the voices of those who are impacted, who have often been silenced because people are speaking on behalf of them. People are speaking on behalf of the poor. They're speaking on behalf of people experiencing homelessness, and folks aren't at the table. And politically, it's been a struggle for representation. There's been a fight in Skid Row for decades to create a Skid Row neighborhood council where the neighborhood tells the city what they would like to see. And for me, I see that's part of what I see as the power of prevention and work that I've seen. The testimony through advocacy over the years, the community meetings that we host and participate in, the decision makers come to the table. They come to Skid Row meetings. They're there. We have representatives from the local council office, the mayor's office, recreation and parks, all of those systems that affect the neighborhood. Through advocacy, folks would go to the public hearings and make noise, and they were like, whoa, let's come to you, don't come to us. And that's the real leverage that you get, because sometimes folks feel as if it's a poor neighborhood, you don't have political leverage, but you have their strength in numbers. And when you show up at public hearings and folks are embarrassed, and things start to change, and we've seen that. So we have collaborations with decision makers where some folks who are unhoused formerly or currently are sitting at the table with decision makers and able to tell them this is what we need. And the things that people need, that they're experts on. So that's the other piece, is being able to really, as I mentioned, uplift the voices of those who are impacted. They are experts. If you say, oh, what are the major drug-related issues in the community? They'll tell you, well, this place right here, they sell to minors. That place right there, you know, we got 5 liquor stores on one block. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on in the planning department, but they put 5 liquor stores on one block. And so I think that's really the power. It's just the testimonies from people who are given opportunity to participate, the feedback from community members. So we do a lot of engagement in our local parks. And community members, when I see them, they're always like, wow, you're the people that come to the park. We really appreciate what you do. It creates a whole new vibe, you know, the music, mm-hmm. the opportunity to be represented. And then the other thing is some local policies. There have been local policies around accessibility and efforts to limit over concentration of alcohol outlets and dispensaries and those type of things that really show the power of prevention to affect your environment and community. And lastly, we're fortunate because of these connections and relationships to stay in touch with young people who are now adults that came through our program. They're either working in prevention now or they're doing their own thing, and they stay in touch and contact. And we did we're working on an oral history project where we're catching up with folks that are now parents, and they talk about, and that's one challenge we have in prevention, is really documenting the true impacts of our work, because how can you really show you prevented something? And the best way to do that are these testimonies where folks will say, you don't even realize how you changed my life by just listening to me. And we're able to hear those testimonies because we keep those connections and relationships. So that for me is just a testimony to the power of prevention.
Awesome. Awesome, Charles. Yeah, I think, you know, when you said amplify their voices, and I'm with you, because I remember in college, I read a book. I can't remember the author nor the book, but I remember it says, like, I can't speak for them. So I stand with them, you know, but you amplify their voices and you give them this purpose, right? You give them this ability. They're not, especially in your community where maybe there's a lot of, at least from an outside perspective, right? Like, oh, there's a certain, you know, people see the skid row, but no, you know, you're creating these spaces where there's positive vibes, like you said, and it's changing lives, you know? So thank you so much, Charles, for sharing your experience. I don't know if Christy would like to follow up, or Stephen.
Yes, definitely. Yes to everything Charles said. I think it's a prevention village, right? And I think just like everything else, prevention evolved. Like, I remember when I started at Day One about 15 years ago, they were like, oh, those are the prohibitionists. And I was like, oh, what? I was coming from higher education. I was like, I'm not trying to be a prohibitionist. But I think it's changed. And like, we're not adversarial with the corner liquor store. We're not adversarial with the supermarkets. We now see them as partners in this prevention work, right? So it's like, they don't want to sell to minors either. So I think it's coming in and sharing best practices and where we're at, and creating this vision of what kind of community do we all want to live in. We all want to know each other. We all want to be neighbors. We all want our kids to thrive. So I think it's coming together and creating this idea of what is our ideal neighborhood and how are we going to get there helping each other. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think that's when it really does work. And so it's kind of like looking at just the past few years and, you know, looking at CVS, again, putting people over profit. Like, I'm not going to sell cigarettes anymore. Who says that, right? Like, we grew up in a time when I remember going to a restaurant, it's like, do you want the smoking section or the non-smoking? That's not there anymore. And people think this is impossible, but it is possible. It happened. Now we're looking at other things. So it's like, it really is, I think, again, if we want a better life, if we want to advance public health, it's kind of going back to what Charles says. We're in these neighborhoods. We know the people who live here. We help them raise their kids. You know, we are the good community partner that shows up. Man, during COVID, we all became case managers. You know, it was like, where do I get food? Where do I go for a shot? I can't access Wi-Fi. So, you know, I think we are the trusted partners in the community that people turn to for help. So I think, like, using that trust, it's our responsibility to advocate and help them create the communities they want to live in and make them better. So I think that's a really exciting part of our work. And together we make great things happen. I've seen a street where it was like known to be a gang ridden street. And now the neighbors are out on Saturdays having coffee. It's coffee time because the neighborhood just decided to get out and make it happen. And it starts with one person. It really does. It becomes that one, oh, you need to know that one mom. That one mom knows all the moms. So those are the community champions that we work with and we know, and then we can like partner with to make great things happen in the neighborhoods. And it's not rocket science. It doesn't take a ton of money. It just takes relationships. That's the truth.
And that's it, right? Relationships. And like I said, we're not adversaries to everyone. You know, they might think they're natural forms. Maybe it is a liquor store, but it isn't. They're part of our community, right? they're making their living, they have their families. You know, I remember the liquor stores, I used to buy the chips, but it's best practices, right? Having that relationship where you can have those conversations and changes in the community. So thank you, Christy. Stephen, any comment from you?
Yeah, where do I begin? I love what Christy said, community champions. I love that. That's great. And Charles, about the, you know, that he's maintaining contact with the people that he helped a long time ago. That's fantastic. I think in the power of prevention, there's so many things. I think the one thing is the people, like you said, seeing the faces, helping someone that's not feeling well. I think that's, and maybe even watching their light turn on, you know, watching that little bit of hope or glimmer of hope, you know, come into their world. And then to have somebody you see years later, as Charles was saying, you know, and sometimes you don't even recognize them because they've just made such a beautiful turnaround. And it's just, it just becomes so passionate when, you know, you might have just helped one person. As Chris said, it starts with one person and maybe they've gone to help other people as well. I just started an outreach with the Core Center and going into the encampments and things. That was an experience. As Charles said, there's so much, there's stigma and addiction in the substance abuse as well, but also in with the homeless, as Charles was saying, my goodness, you know, that was a new experience for me. I have to say that I my heart was racing. I was a little fearful going into a community that I didn't understand, and to have them come out and start talking to you and explaining to you what's been going on in their lives. And it just really changed my thoughts on things personally. And, you know, and as well, one of the things that I've seen change through my 14 years of working in the field is the stigma issue, that people are really starting to open up to, people getting better, you know, or that it is a disease and not just, you know, that person's an addict. As well, I've seen harm reduction really take place in going out in the encampments. We're handing out naloxone and to the people because of the amount of fentanyl that's coming in and the overdoses, and we're handing out naloxone, and they understand what it is, and they, because they've seen something. And for us to be out there to be able to give them some hope, provide them with some services. We went out with nurses that were doing COVID tests, and just to give that community some assistance that I feel they really, you know, maybe in the past they might not have been able to receive. And now I think because that level of stigma is going down and we have people like us that are going out there and helping, I think we're really doing a wonderful service. I've also seen the mental health aspect of this really take a turn, whereas I see, you know, whole person care. I see the whole person being cared for now, whereas 14 years ago, they would just concentrate on, pardon me, the addiction versus, you know, seeing the person as, you know, let's look into why. Instead of just, well, we need to just fix this person. And I think that's been a real, real wonderful change for me to see, is that we're looking at the person's history. We're seeing if they've had childhood trauma. We're kind of embarking on a journey with the person to really, really help everything about the person, not just the fact that the person might have a substance dependency. That's one thing I've really seen change for the better. And then the harm reduction, such as the naloxone that we're trying to get out there right now to help the people, to maybe save some people from overdose. This work that I do now is so much different than what I did before in the detox, because in the detox, you have the specific job that you're doing. And now we have the ability to just really get out there and meet all these wonderful people like you guys. And then as well, try to really get out there and just serve our community. And it's my passion is coming back as well, because, you know, COVID really, you know, we were at home for a long period of time and we weren't really being able to get out there and assist the community. And now it's coming back again. And so I'm starting to see some real benefits and and that, and like I said, really being able to see the faces of the people we're assisting and to show them that, as Charles said, that they do have a voice and that we can care for them. I think it's been really special.
I wanted to add one other thing real quick. Just in the prevention, we've been using this mantra that connection is the opposite of addiction. And that really is to the point, as you mentioned, just how COVID has impacted folks. There have been increases in, you know, mental health challenges, substance abuse. And mm-hmm. so that concept of community is more important than ever. And we were fortunate, as Christy mentioned, to be able to respond in real time. And so when a lot of folks were safer at home, we were trying to figure out how we can support community members that had no one. And so we were able to keep this sense of connection and community, but also to the intersection, as Stephen mentioned, with mental health as well, that community building also supports mental health. And it helps to lessen trauma exposure. And so there's also an intersection there. One of the things that community folks identified, we did a survey, a stress and coping survey around COVID. And one of the biggest things that people identified as a coping strategy was community. Being able to talk to other people was number one. And the number two thing they had identified was listening to music. So that's powerful, just the power of music to heal and to connect and the therapeutic aspects of that we incorporate into the work we do here in the community. But they also mentioned exercise. They mentioned talking to healthcare providers, but they were a little lower down on the list. And so just shows how the power of community building and culture it helps to support resilience.
Yeah, those are awesome points, right? Staying connected with your community. And I think earlier in the discussion, we talked about everyone kind of having their story, right? And everybody's story matters. And I think Stephen was able to kind of show that through his experience, right? He said he went into a neighborhood he didn't understand, but when he started listening to who they are, right? Their experiences and so forth, he was able to connect with them. And I think that's what we do, right? We connect, and being part of that connection where we listen to someone's story, you know, one-on-one basis, or even from a survey, how to cope, you know, that's what we're trying to do, is connect with their communities and provide everything they need for substance abuse prevention and mental health support. So thank you so much for these responses. So we have our last question. So I think, you know, prevention workforce is a purpose-driven career. So, Christy, can you expand on why, like, this prevention work is a purpose-driven career? Like, why is it that?
You know, I think just listening to Charles and Stephen in this conversation today, like, we know prevention takes heart. You need to have heart. Like, this is a human issue. So I think, again, stepping away from only one person, too, like, I think when you're really doing effective prevention, you understand that you're not just helping one person, you're helping an entire community. That's the truth. And I wrote this quote, I captured it today because I want to share it with you all, but it's my new favorite. And it says, the soil in which we're rooted, the branches on which we grow. And I mean, visually, I think it makes you understand, like, it doesn't matter. Like, unless you take care of the soil, that root, that where you're growing people, families, that community, wellness, if it's not there, you're not going to raise, like, thriving people, thriving children, healthy children, right? So I think that's where I keep going back to that built environment and giving it some accountability for some of the problems we have. You know, I think we need to understand, how are we systematically, what kind of cities, what kind of communities are we designing? And what's the difference between, like, these affluent areas and the low income areas, and who lives there, and the businesses we allow there, and all that? Like, you can't talk about prevention without talking about it. Because I'll tell you, if I go down the street to South Pasadena or San Marino, I'm not going to see the same amount of smoke shops, liquor stores, check cashing places as I do in Northwest Pasadena. So again, we need to ask why. Why are we allowing that? So that's a big, not only question for me, but it's a passion point for me as far as advocacy and what we do as prevention people. Now, going deeper into that question, I think regularly we all are able to do what we do through funding, right? Like grants and from foundations or the state or the county. And they will always ask me, like, what are you most proud of? That's a question. And my answer is consistently, out of all the years I've been at Day One, what I'm most proud of is to be able to say that six of my full-time staff members are students that I've mentored since they were 12. Students that grew up with me, went off to college, got their degrees, and came back. And not only did they improve themselves, but they broke the poverty cycles in their family. And when I mean poverty, it's not just poverty, but it's also like these cycles of addiction and, you know, bad habits and things that usually pull down an entire family. And again, going back to that one person, when it breaks with that one person, it affects everybody else in that family. When I get Eric to go to college, so will his younger brother and sister. Things change. With that one person, everything changes. And then that block changes, and then the neighborhood changes, and the community changes. And I think that is just my favorite thing in the world. So I think, like, bringing back those students and knowing, again, they're safe with us. We love them. We care for them. We want them to do well. That we will stay up countless hours in the night writing grants so we can give them jobs. So, like, parents that don't believe in college, don't say, like, oh, what's college for? Just go get a job. That's not for our kind. And then you come back and you go, no, it is for you. And I will help you get your first job. And we all know, like, it's that first job that leads to 10 better jobs after that. So I think, again, once they come to us, they stay with us, not just for the period of, like, the spark of adolescence, but we go to their weddings and we see their children's and we go to all these situations in their life. And again, it starts and ends with relationship. I guess that's the best way I could frame it. Yeah, I'll leave it to the other guys to chime in, but I might come back, but that's enough for now.
Well, thank you so much.
I was laughing, I'm listening. We had one community member in particular, and he would just always come to the office and he was asked, what do you guys do? Like, he just completely did not understand. It's like, I don't know what you do. What do you do? and it was challenging to explain, like, how embedded our prevention work was, and how, you know, our work really was collaborating with community members to improve the neighborhood. And one thing that we've seen here in Skid Row is this has also led to the creation of jobs. The lack of access to public restrooms was a major issue here, and community members designed a hygiene center and named it the Skid Row Community Refresh Spot. Partnered, got resources from the mayor's office, from LASA, and were able to create a center that's open 24 hours where people can go take showers, do their laundry, use the restrooms, charge their phone, have access to drinking water. And one of the biggest things, as I mentioned earlier, that community members wanted was just a safe place to relax, listen to music, and connect with other community members, a place where people are treated with dignity. And so the work that we do also creates opportunities that didn't exist previously to address these social determinants of health and these community issues that are harming individuals. And I think that's one thing I want to stress is just thinking outside the box, just like social enterprise, like engaging folks that are impacted and creating their own businesses and being able to give back and being able to support the community, because we see these intersecting issues. Poverty and the work that we do is fundamental. Poverty and how it contributes to mental illness, how it contributes to substance abuse. And so, to Christy's point as well, just being able to show community members that your advocacy can create employment opportunities. We've been able to expand employment at our local parks to improve the parks and to hire local park local folks to help manage the parks and to have a presence there. There's also opportunities just for looking at land use. Why are certain uses allowed? Who's in charge? Who works in the planning department? Why don't we have people from our neighborhood working in planning? You know, it leads to leadership opportunities. Folks that want to explore careers in politics and education. And lastly, I think just looking at spinoff opportunities to provide support. Diet is a whole another crucial piece that's connected to culture, healthy food access, foods that are culturally appropriate, and healing rituals. We talk about trauma exposure. How do you support the healing rituals of the community? How people can support their resiliency, how people can stay healthy. So just looking at public health in general, there are a lot of intersecting paths to employment where you can help to improve your own life, improve the life of your neighbors and your community and neighborhood as well. So when we talk about purpose-driven careers, that's really embedded in the prevention work that we do.
All right, thank you, Charles. How about yourself, Steven?
Absolutely. I love what Chris and Charles both said. I've seen so many people, when the light turns on, that they want to find something purposeful to do. And I think this field especially is great for people, I think, who've had some adversity in their lives, because I think we have a passion to help other people. And in seeing that, I've just, like myself, I just fell into this career and it's been such a blessing. And I think, I'm always out there telling people like, hey, you should really check into this. And I see other people as well. So as Christy was saying, it takes a village, and our village is getting bigger for sure. And I think, as well as we were talking about earlier with stigma lessening about these things, I think people are finding inspiration in helping other people make a life for themselves. And I really, really, really think this particular things that we're doing is just so purpose driven. There's a lot of rewards behind it. And just knowing that you're helping someone, just knowing that you're maybe making someone's day better, and just talking to people and maybe getting them through something that they're going through. And in doing that, I think there's just, I think it's just been such a blessing, and again, as we do at what we do at work, all of us in our networking and meeting each other, and knowing that we have this whole group of people that are out there just fighting the battle to help one person, just one person, I think it's so special. I really, it's been a wonderful experience.
Yeah, thank you. For me, I think prevention work is just so, just listen to our responses, right? And how we're connected with the communities and bringing resources and working with youth, and there's jobs later, or, they thank you for the work and investment you do in their community, right? Or you're able to share your personal experience. And before this, honestly, I didn't know of the prevention workforce, to be honest. I knew maybe like treatment services, right? And I've worked with youth for 10, 15 years now. I ran two youth centers for a while, and I couldn't tell you like where to go. So I think it's so important to have this conversation, not just for National Prevention Week, but who is prevention, right? Like, it's community members in the community, essentially, right? We're part of our community. So I'm from Inglewood, I'm maybe not born and raised, but I'm from Inglewood. That's my community. I love Inglewood. I've been there for a while now. I know, parents that they bring me their little kids in their middle school. I'm like, what? Like, how? You were just so little, And I think this important for the community to hear this, right? That there's resiliency. That word I've heard many times, especially from Charter, this community resiliency. Substance abuse doesn't have to be cyclical, right? It can be a tree, right? Where we're allowing these opportunities and sharing this information where they can grow into these trees, and the community benefits from the branches and the fruits that it gives, right? And I just want to thank each of one of you for sharing the work, your passion, your commitment, and your investment into your communities, because it does go a long way. And I hope people can know more of us, participate with us, because again, we're amplifying their voices. We're working with them in tandem with the community. So thank you so much. I don't know if there's any closing comments or anything else that each of you would like to share.
Yeah, just one quick one, because I think we've touched on a lot. What you just mentioned reminded me of just another word, consistency. Like that is something that is really key to the effectiveness of our work, is being consistent, being present, being accessible, being responsive. But to that point, to support, and I talked about how long I've been working here, part of that also is making sure that we have resources to support prevention, that we invest mm-hmm. in prevention, because that's been a challenge, because people don't understand prevention. It doesn't get the resources that it should have. And so we definitely need mm-hmm. to advocate that we expand dedicated resources to support a range of prevention efforts.
And I would like to second with Charles's motion. I think we live in a world that usually we don't do something until something bad happens. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's why people don't understand prevention, right? Like, oh, what are you doing? Well, it'll cost you a lot less if you invest in prevention instead of waiting and looking at the hospital fees for all the overdoses and everything else that's, you know, in-care support services at schools and everywhere else, right? So, but on a lighter note, I'll tell you this too, since we're talking about a purpose-driven career, is that like Charles, I've been here for a long time, and a lot of us who are passionate about this work stay here. And I didn't come in here with that intention. I came here, you know, young guy, ready to go, 5 years, next move, bigger move. And then I fell in love with the community. I fell in love with the people. I fell in love with the work. And I think a part of that is prevention is everything. And I'm someone who gets bored very quickly. And I have not been bored in 15 years. So, because again, prevention is art and advocacy. Prevention is community placemaking. It's neighborhood building. It's like so many different policy. So I think in prevention, so much lives in there that you don't really have a chance to get bored. If you're somebody who does get bored quickly, prevention is a great job for you. I think you can, it could be anything really. It is everything. So I just wanted to add that a little on a lighter note. There's a lot of benefits to our work that make it super enjoyable to me, as well as the, you know, the biggest, most meaningful factor of it is watching people thrive because of maybe something small that you did. I was at a school district public hearing once, and a teacher, a parent was sitting behind me, and she just nudged my shoulder and she goes, "You did the skills program and you changed my son's life. Thank you so much." And she pulled out her pen and wrote a check for $100. And I knew $100 meant so much more to her than it would probably meant to our program. But I mean, I've been taught to humbly accept and say thank you, because it meant that much to her, because you saved my son's life. And I think that's what prevention does. So cool stuff. Great afternoon with you guys. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any comments yourself, Steve?
No, I just wanted to really thank you guys for having me. This has just been wonderful. And to be able to just have a nice conversation about what we do and how we can, you know, just even just, I've gained several ideas just from being here about how, you know, just to keep it going, you know, to assist my community, you know. So I really appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you. I appreciate everybody here.
Yeah, and thanks for moderating, Marlon.
Yeah, great job.
Keeping us on point. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, as we wrap things up, I want to thank Chrissy Somani, Executive Director at Day One. We have Charles Porter, Project Coordinator at Social Model Recovery Systems, United Coalition East. And then we have Stephen Cagle, with Substance Abuse Counselor at CORE at the Curtis Tucker Center of Community Wellness out in Inglewood, California, representing the South Bay and Harbor area. And again, my name is Marlon Pascual. I'm a community organizer with ADAP. And thank you for being part of this special presentation of Prevention 365 podcast in partnership with the Department of Public Health here in Los Angeles, the Substance Abuse Prevention and Control. And usually we say we do prevention is every day in every way, but as part of this conversation, prevention is everything. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
All right, take care.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you.